Morning. Today's topic is having snowball fights on Shabbos. So the discussion really is a few different malachas and yisurim that you have to tackle in order to learn the sugya, and that entails understanding muksa a little bit, nolad, and other malachas as well. So I remember around 7-8 years ago when I moved into my house, my first house that we bought in Woodmere. So I think it was the first Shabbos, maybe the second Shabbos, was raining. And in this house, we had originally a detached garage, and the people before us built it, connected it, and made an attached garage. So the roof where they made to make an attached garage, it started to leak from the rain. So I was familiar with the halacha that you cannot use a kli that's not muksa, to cover something or to put it in a way that you can no longer use it. Meaning, there's a halacha called ein kli nitel ela davar hanitel b'shabbos. You can only use an object which is not muksa for the purpose of another object that's not muksa. But let's say, for example, an egg is laid on Shabbos. The egg is muksa, now nola. I can't take a kli and cover that up because I'm using it for a non-muksa item. The egg is muksa. I can use a chair or a cup, which is not muksa, for something that is muksa. So I didn't know what the lacha was with the rain dripping and the leaking from my roof, whether that's muksa or not. So I wasn't sure if I could put a pail there below to catch the water, because now the rainwater falls into the pail, and the pail is going to be muksa, and you can't use it, and you can't be mevatel a kli on Shabbos. I wasn't sure what the halacha was, so at the time it just let it drip. So I had asked Rav Shechter the next day in YU, and he says, my first Mishnah in Beitza, that's mutter. So I learned this halacha afterwards, and that's the first Mar Malkum here. So the Mishnah tells us here, the first Mishnah in the fifth parak of Beitza, Daf Lam and Heyman Beis, Mashilin Peros Derech Aruba B'yamtuf Alo B'Shabbos. Halacha not related to us, but that what it means is that a person is allowed to take down his fruit that it might be letting dry on the rooftop. They used to let their fruit dry. And let's say it starts to rain. On Yontif, it's going to ruin the dried fruit. So you're allowed to take them down on Yontif, but Shabbos you're not allowed to. And this is a concern of tircha. How much tircha is permitted on Shabbos versus Yontif? So Yontif, we allow a little bit more tircha than on Shabbos. So this is not considered that much tircha. It's mutter on Yontif, but you can't do this on Shabbos. It's too much tircha to take down the fruit from the roof on Shabbos. And then the Mishnah says, "Mechasin peros b'kelim mipnei hadlaf." Let's say there's a leak. A dlaf means a leak, a drip. And I have my fruit inside my house, and the roof begins to leak. This is the harlacha. So it's going to ruin my fruit that are inside the house now. I'm allowed to take a kli, or maybe some type of tarp, and cover the fruit. That's permitted. V'chein kadei yayin v'kadei shemen. Also, let's say I have pitchers of oil and pitchers of wine, and if the water gets in, it's going to ruin them. I'm also allowed to cover them on Yontif. And then the Mishnah says, v'nosin kli tachas adilaf b'shabbos. Not only can I cover peros and kalim, I could also use a kli and let the water drip into my bucket so it doesn't ruin my furniture. That's permitted in Mefurish Mishnah. Rav Shechter told me about that you're allowed to put a pail underneath the leak on Shabbos and Yontif.
Or would that leak, I mean, the water would be muktze?
So the Gemara is going to say, what's the problem? Would it be muksa? Would it not be muksa? Would it be nolad? Would it not be nolad? So that's what the Gemara is going to deal with now. So the Gemara says on Lamed Vavam Aleph, number 3, Umechasin es haperos, a person is allowed to cover up the fruit to prevent the leak from ruining the fruit. So Ula says, Vafilu avira delivne. Let's say I have a row of bricks. Now bricks are muksa nyantiv because I can't use bricks on yantiv. They're needed to build. I can't build. Since there's no purpose of bricks, the bricks are usur. So he says, I'm even allowed to cover my bricks so my bricks don't get ruined from the water. Even though they're not muksa. Even though they are muksa. And Rabbi Yitzhak says, no, only peros haru'uyin. I'm only allowed to cover fruit that are edible. I can only cover something that itself is not muksa. I can protect fruit. But something like bricks, which are muksa, I'm not allowed to protect those. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzhak goes according to his general tamei, according to his reasoning in general. The Amar Rabbi Yitzhak, ein kli nitel ela davar hanitel b'shabbos. I can only use one kli for the benefit of another kli that's mutter. So I could take this tarp, which is mutter, there's no muksa in the tarp, I could cover fruit, because fruit is also not muksa. But what I cannot do is I can't take a tarp to cover bricks. Bricks are muksa. I can't take a tarp to cover a newly laid egg on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Something that is muksa, I can't use a kli for something that is muksa.
Let's say you have 2 buckets, which I happen to have. So I'll put another bucket quickly there, take the first bucket, pour it out, and then just keep moving back and forth.
Yep. So the Gemara is going to get to that point, and then the Shulchan Aruch will address, let's say it gets full, what do you do with it? We're going to get there. So right now, the halacha is, if Yitzhak holds, you could only use one non-muksa object, a kli, to cover another kli, a mutter kli, like fruit. But something that's muksa, I cannot cover something that is muksa. That's the concept, ein kli nital ella l'davar ha-nital b'shabbos. I can only use one kli to protect another non-muksa kli. So Gemara says, Tanan, the Mishnah says, Mechasin, it's a peros bekalim, peros in avilo de livne lo. The Mishnah gives the example that you're allowed to cover fruit. Sounds like only allowed to cover fruit, but you cannot cover bricks. There's a kasha to Ula. Ula thought you could even cover bricks. So Mishnah should have taught the greater Chiddush that you could even cover bricks. Certainly fruit. So the Gemara says, Hu adin da afilo avir de livne. In a chanami, even though the Mishnah only talks about covering fruit, it also meant you're allowed to cover bricks, even though bricks are muksa. So why did it only specify peros? The idea, the tani reishim mishilim peros, since the Mishnah in the beginning was talking about bring fruit down, we're talking about fruit, so tana seifa nami mechasin is a peros. To be consistent, having the subject of the conversation be about fruit, they spoke about the fruit in the seifa as well. But einach nami, according to Ula, you would be allowed to cover bricks as well. Then the Gemara says, what about the next part of the Mishnah? Tanan, v'chein kadeh yayin, v'chein kadeh shemen. I'm allowed to cover up olive oil and wine that are in pitchers, which are mutter to eat. So only if they're mutter, you drink wine, you eat shemen's eyes. But something that's muksa, like bricks, you can't cover. Gemara says, no, halcha b'may skinan, what type of olive oil, what type of yayin are we talking about? Betivla, where it's tevel. Tevel is something that's not tied, no chuma is meiser taken from it. I can't eat tevel, and I can't even take my Chuma Meiser on Shabbos either, because what's the issue of taking Chuma Meiser on Yontif and Shabbos? Tikkun Mana. I'm fixing it. It's a Tikkun Mana. So I have Tevel on Shabbos, so I can't do anything with it. It's Muksa. So even that type of Shemen, even that type of Yayin, that's Tevel, since it's Muksa, I'm even allowed to cover that. That's how Ula interprets the Mishnah. Not Stam Shemen. Shemen Shel Tevel. And Hochanami Mistavra, and his Rai is, why is it logical to say that the olive oil and the wine's talking about tevel? Because the isaka daitach kade yain v'kade shemen deheterah, if we're talking about mutter olive oil and mutter wine, hatani l'resha peros, the resha already told us peros that are mutter to eat. So why would we have to teach us two different cases of mutter for items? That fruit's mutter and shemen and yain's mutter? Once you teach me that peros, which are mutter, I could cover, so certainly shemen, which is also mutter. So it must be the chiddush is that shemen and yain is talking about something that's not mutter, namely that's tevel. So I'm allowed to use something to cover muksa objects, according to Ula. So then the Gemara says, no, kade yain and kade shemen itzrichle. No, you could even say that the wine and oil is talking about mutter, non-tevel olive oil, non-tevel wine, which is mutter. So why repeat it? If you already taught peros and mutter, and now shemen's mutter, it seems to be repetitive. You would think maybe the only heter of covering up fruit is milhepse meruba. The fruit's going to apparently be a lot of money wasted if it gets ruined by the water. So I'm allowed to cover those types of fruits up. But chashashu. But lehepse mu'at lo chashashu. A little bit of a ruining of the olive oil and wine. It's not going to be such a big hefsed, apparently. So maybe there we did not give you a heter to cover it. Kamashmalan, even by a small hefsed, we permitted it. So then the last line of the Gemara, which is why we really need this, Tanan, the Mishnah says, Nosin klitachas adlaf b'shabbos, and lechora, dlaf is not mutter. Who's going to drink the rainwater leaking from my roof? It's disgusting. It first falls on the roof, it gets all dirty, and it goes through the tar, and then it gets down to my bucket. Who's going to drink that? That's obviously muksa water. So we see that you're allowed to cover up or use a pail to catch the water. You could use a davar nitel for something else that's muksa, like rain. Says the Gemara, "Bidilaf haroi has to be where the rainwater is actually roi for something. What's it roi for?" So we have to look in the Shulchan Aruch in a moment, but it has to be roi where it's muksa, rather non-muksa. If the water is muksa, then you cannot put a pail underneath the leak. If it's water that is not muksa, that's roi for something, then it's not muksa, and you are allowed to put the pitcher. So how do you define, how do I know if my rainwater is mutter roi or not? L'chora, no one would drink rainwater. It doesn't go, it's not clean at all. Very good. So we'll see that. Very good. So how do you define roi? Is it drinking? Is it bathing? Water, is it giving grass to dogs, water and grass? What's considered roi to make it not muks anymore? So Shulchan Aruch writes, number 4, Simin Shen Lamdches Sivches. Mutter li tein kli tachas adlaf b'Shabbos. You're allowed to place a pail under your leek on Shabbos. Vim nismale, if it gets full, shofcho, you pour it out, umachzir l'mkomo, put it back in place. Dump it somewhere else, obviously not on the grass. Put it down the drain, put it in the sink, and then have an empty one. Or if you have a second pail, whatever you want, it's completely mutter. Behu, but the qualification is sheyehei hadilaf roi lerchitza, has to be usable for bathing and showering in. Aval im eino roi, if it's not usable for bathing in, aser mishum shein osin graf sherei lechachila, it's aser because when you put it down there, in essence you're making it's going to fill up. And it's, let's say it's dirty water. We don't have this, but let's say the rainwater is dirty. It hits the roof and comes up brown. So no one's going to use brown water for bathing. So in essence, you have a pitcher now, a pail of brown water, which is going to smell bad, and you're allowed to move garbage and other things, excrement you can move in the house if it's bothering you. So now you're allowed to move that pail out of the way because it becomes a graf sherei. You can't create that lechachila. So therefore, you don't use a pail and just let it hit the floor and it gets go into the ground. They had back then dirt floors. But lemaisa for us, since rainwater is roi lechita, even though no one would need to do that because we have our systems and plumbing, but it in theory is roi, and therefore it's not a problem. You can place the pitcher below. So the Mishnah Berurah comments in number 5, lechita, that it has to be roi for bathing. De'ein al hamater hayored, the rain that comes down, there's no shem muksa, O Nolad, we'll get into a second what the issue of Nolad might be, but there's no issue of Muksa like we saw in the Gemara in Beta. But Yachal Shtosa, you could drink it, we wouldn't. Or Lerchos Menu, or you could bathe with it, we wouldn't do that either, but it's still Roy for this. The Huadin, Hu Roy Rak Lishtias Behema. Let's say I wouldn't use it to bathe, it's too brown for me, but my dog would drink it, that would also be considered Roy. And therefore, most likely, no matter where you live, at least in our areas, the rain would be Roy for something, and there is no Shei Muksa at all on rain. So you are allowed to place the pitcher, the pail, below the leak. But what about the problem of Nolad? What would the issue of Nolad be? So the Gemara in Erevin is talking about the concept of Tchum. Tchum means I cannot walk outside 2,000 amos from wherever I am for Shabbos. I can't walk outside the city borders. So let's say I can't walk out, but let's say my property. What about my shirt, my shoes? I lend it to somebody. So does it go based on the owner, me, or does it go based on the person who's now borrowing it? So the halacha is, if it's mine, if I own it, then he's limited to use my shoes in my tchum. It doesn't go to his unless he makes some type of acquisition. So the Gemara says, when it comes to drawing water on Shabbos, so that water goes based on me, wherever I go. If I have 2,000 amos here, so the water that I draw on Shabbos becomes a part of mine, because I'm konet on Yontif or Shabbos, Yontif. So the Gemara now has an interesting conversation. Look at number 6. Amar mar b'yom tov harei hein kiragle kol adam. The rainwater goes according to whoever drew that water. Wherever my tchum goes, that water could go with me that far. Asks Gemara Vamai, why is that true? Why does it go based on me, the one who drew the water? Likne shvisa bokainos. What's okainos? Like the ocean, the Mediterranean for them. But okainos is the ocean. Sounds like ocean. What do you mean? All rainwater comes from the ocean, this assumption. So that it goes from the ocean to the clouds back down here. So on Yontif, when Yontif started, wherever that water was in the ocean, so it should be said, that's the tchum where it should be. Ah, it traveled on Yontif to the clouds and down to me. It should still go back to where it was in the ocean. So it shouldn't go based on where I drew it from, where I go. It should go based on wherever it was in the Mediterranean. So the Gemara says, must be then, the fact that the Gemara doesn't assume that way, that it doesn't go based on the ocean, but it goes based on me, it must be lema de lo krebi Eliezer. This Gemara does not learn like Rebbe Eliezer. Who's Rebbe Eliezer? De ik Rebbe Eliezer, de hod amar, kol ha'olam kula mimei okainos hushosa. He assumed, not everyone assumed this way, but he did assume that all rainwater comes from the Mediterranean. That's what he assumed. So according to him, wherever that rainwater was on Yontif, Erev Yontif, when Yontif started, in the ocean, that's where the tchum has to be drawn. And it doesn't go based on me. But the fact that the Gemara doesn't assume that way, that it doesn't go based on the ocean, it goes based on me, we don't think that every rainwater comes from the ocean. It's created somehow in the atmosphere above, in the clouds, that's where it starts off on. Not in the ocean, they create the molecules in the rain and the clouds, and that's where rain comes from, directly from there. So whoever gets it on Yontif, it goes based on me, because it doesn't come from the ocean. That's what the Gemara is assuming. Forget all the science behind it, we're just going to take the Gemara at face value right now, but that's the Gemara's simple understanding. So Gemara says, wait a second. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, hacha ba'avim sheniskashu me'erv Yontif aiskinen. No, maybe even Rabbi Eliezer could learn like this Gemara. Granted, all rainwater comes from the ocean. But this is talking about a situation where they already left the ocean before Yontif started. The clouds were there. When, let's say, assume Yontif was Shabbos, let's say. So Friday, the clouds already existed. It already left the ocean. So it's up in the air, in the clouds, when Yontif starts. So there's no Shvisa in the ocean. It's in the clouds. That's the situation we're talking about. So then when it comes down, so then I decide where the tchum is. So then the Gemara says, V'dilma hanich azli, v'hanich achrinu ninu. How do you know the same clouds I'm looking at right now, that the rain's coming from, are the same clouds that it was in Erev Yom Tov? Maybe they left, new ones came. So he says, the ish lahu simani begavayu. I saw it had a certain shape. It looked like an elephant, let's say. The same elephant that was there Erev Yom Tov still looks like an elephant now in Yom Tov itself. So I knew it's the same exact cloud. So I didn't come from the ocean. From the beginning of Yom Tov until now, it was hovering over my house. I know for sure that the rain is in that cloud. Okay. The Gemara says, Ibai same, alternatively, habi safik didivrayim. I don't really know. It could be the same cloud. It could be a different cloud. But the concept is, since the Isser of Tchum is only Midirabanan, does everybody assume it's Dirabanan only? There's one opinion out there in the Gemara that assumes Tchumim is Deraisa. Who's that? Rabbi Kiva holds Tchumim is Deraisa. We assume it's normally Dirabanan. So since the concept of Tchum is Dirabanan, I don't really know if the rain was in this cloud before Yom Tov or not, but it's a Safek Didirayim. So Safek Didirayim Lahakel, we could be Mekel and allow me to say it's not an issue of Tchum on Yom Tov. So then the Gemara says, Liknei Shvis Abavim. Okay, now we're talking about a case where I see that same elephant-shaped cloud today as I saw last night. So the water's been up there the whole time. So now, let the Shvis, let the Tchum be defined from up in the sky, up in the clouds. So we normally think of Tchum as going horizontally, whatever direction it is, but whatever, vertically. So Gemara has such a discussion. Talks about Eliyahu Navi coming from up Shemayim, has he leave the Tchum on Yom Tov and Shabbos. So maybe there should be Tchum here. So calculate how far up the cloud is, and then take that off the 2,000 amos, and then I can only go that many amos left horizontally. So Gemara says, so the fact that the Gemara doesn't entertain such a possibility tells me Tif Shet Minei, we can learn from here, the Ein Tchumim Lemala Me'asara. There's no Tchum going up vertically, it's only horizontally. Because the Yesh Tchumim, had there been Tchumim even vertically, Liknei Shvis Abavim. So therefore we see that there is no Tchum going up and down. Liolam Gvar Se'em L'cha Yesh Tchum, maybe really there is Tchum, even vertically. So shouldn't there be a problem? When the rain comes down on Shabbos, I have no idea how high clouds are, I don't know how amos are, but let's say it's 1,000 amos from me to the cloud. So that means, so if there really is Tchum vertically, so when it comes down to me, so that should be 1,000 amos down this way, and I only get 1,000 amos to take the rainwater in any direction now. So really there's Tchum, so why am I allowed to take the rainwater 2,000 amos? Why don't I take into account the 1,000 amos that traveled from up to down? Because Maya Be'eva Mivle Blui, what does that mean? That the water is absorbed in the cloud. Rashi writes in number 7, we'll get back to the rest of the Gemara in a moment. It's as if it doesn't even exist. The rain might be vapor up in the clouds, or it just might be absorbed in the cloud. I don't know how these things work, but it's nothing. It's considered kiman de lesne dami. The rain is not water yet in the clouds. And therefore, there's nothing. You have to have mamashis to create the shvisa. I mean, in order for you to have tchum, you need to be physically there. There's nothing physical about rain when it's in the cloud to have a shvisa. It's like air. Air doesn't have shvisa. I could carry the air here in my hand and carry 2,000 amos because the air is nothing. There's no mamashis to it. So rain, when it's in the cloud, there's no mamashis to it. It's bloy, it's absorbed in the cloud. So there's no shvisa up there. So it comes down to the ground. That's where it first becomes mamashis. And then it goes based on wherever I can walk. So the Gemara says, wait a second. If rain is really only vapor, let's assume it's vapor and gas up in the cloud, then there's a bigger problem. Kol shekein dehavilu nolad deisura. It's nolad. It went from a gas to a liquid. And that's a problem of nolad. Nolad's asur on Shabbos. So forget the problems of tchum. I have a more serious problem of nolad, which could possibly be deraisa. So Gemara says no. Ela maya ba'avim minid naidi. It's actually rain is there. The water molecules are in the cloud, but it moves around there. So it's not nolad. The rain is rain in the cloud. It's rain down here. But since it's not kavua, it can't create a shvisa. It's moving. So too, the Gemara explains, so too, when the rain is in the water, in the oceans moving, it cannot create shvisa for tchumim purposes while it's moving. But at the end of the day, what the Gemara concludes is that rain in the clouds is not a problem of nolad, because it was rain, it was water up in the clouds, and it's water down below. That's not a problem of nolad. But had it been vapor, from a gas to a water, that would be a problem of nolad. So now I have to start figuring out what types of forms is considered nolad. What about water to ice, or ice to water? How does snow, is snow water, or is snow really ice? What is it? So these are the complicated discussions of Nolad. How do you define a certain? The Gemara don't tell us all these different dinim. They tell us about rain, but doesn't tell us about snow. Doesn't tell us about ice so clearly. I saw somewhere an interesting discussion of Yosef Engel talks about can a person become a ger on Shabbos? So the Gemara says a ger can't be a ger on Shabbos. He cannot become a ger on Shabbos. Why not?
Exactly.
So the Gemara says tikkun mana, tikkun gavra. So the issue of tikkun mana, like we said before. But he says, shouldn't it also be a problem of nolad? Right. He's a newborn child. So that's a problem of nolad. So it's the same person physically. He's there before he's here now. Nothing changed physically, but his status changed. So that's already nolad. So then certainly from a vapor to water, from vapor to ice to snow should be nolad. Someone told me also, they read a Chiddush Arim 2 weeks ago on Parsha B'Shalach, that he says they had to decide what the man was going to be Erev Shabbos. Because it's nolad to decide on Shabbos. If they want it to taste like a filtervish or to taste like challah or chicken, that's nolad on Shabbos. So nothing physically changed. To my understanding, the man looked the same way no matter what. Nothing changed, but the way it tasted changed. So that might be a problem of nolad according to the Chiddush Arim. Now there's a raya, I told him there's a raya from the Gemara in Beita, a person's not allowed to put cologne or perfume on their clothing. Why not?
That's nolad.
No, exactly. It's molad. You're being molad. You're creating something new in Nablabin. The other issues, but the Gemara says molad. It's molad recha. You're creating recha, and you could put it on your skin because it doesn't really last that much, but you can't put it on your clothing. That's molad. So this is a similar thing. The man, you're not really, I don't think it smelled. Maybe it did smell. But this is added, there's no smell, but there's a new taste now. That might be a problem of molad. So you have to start figuring out when does nolad apply. By the way, I should also point out, molad and nolad are different. Molad is when you're doing the act of changing. Nolad is when it changes on its own. So let's say rain coming down from the clouds would have been nolad. It changes on its own. I didn't do anything. Molad is when I melt snow, let's say. That might be when I do the action. Molad's more serious and severe than nolad. So the Gemara ends up concluding anyways that when it comes to rain, there is no problem of nolad. If rain on Shabbos, there's no nolad, and there also is no muksa either, like the Gemara in Beita said. So rain is mutter. If you want to drink rain on Shabbos, when it comes down, completely mutter. If you want to use it to give to your dogs, mutter. If you want to bathe in it, completely mutter. But the question is, what about snow? When it snows on Shabbos, what's the halacha? So Beis Yosef already quotes from the Shibbol HaLeket that he paskins, we'll skip this number 8, but he paskins clearly that rain is not mukzah, it's not nola. This is page number 2, the other side. You got it? No. Number 8. So now the question number 9 is, what's the status of snow? So Rav Moshe writes in one of his Tshuvos, Igros Moshe Orachaim Chilek Kei Simen Chav Beis, it's entitled Tiltel Sheleg B'Shabbos. The Shela was, Im Sheleg Aser B'Tiltel, is snow mutter or aser in moving? And he paskins very simply, in the tshuva, have muksa, the have nolad. Because of nolad, it's muksa. Meaning, if once it's nolad, then it's usher to use, and then memela becomes muksa as well. They're two different concepts. But anything that's nolad, by definition, since I can't use it, becomes muksa. So, the geshem, like he quotes the Gemara in Erevin in the parentheses, ein rai, rai listor, don't reject me because of rain. We said rain was mutter, so certainly snow should also be mutter. What's the difference? Don't bring me that riot because the ain't okay geshem. It's not like geshem. Well, why not? So yitachin shekavanaso. So I guess this is the explanation of the Rav Moshe. Maybe our tender maybe put in his own explanation here. What does it mean? Why is it not the same? Shekavanaso shesheleg shebaavim vaday shekeman delesedami. The Gemara said when the rain was in the clouds, it was. Initially, they thought it was kemanda lesadami. They thought it was absorbed and it was just vapor. And then the Gemara concluded it's really water. It's moving around in the clouds and it goes from water to water. So nothing changed. But snow was water. It was liquid in the clouds, but now it's snow. It's a different, not material, but it's a different texture now. It's more of a solid, not quite ice, but somewhere in the middle. Gemara Nida said it's not mashke, it's not ochel. It's somewhere in between. But since it did change some form, so therefore, he thinks that would be a problem of nolad.
By the rain from the raya that you just brought from Beitza, so where the perfume is there, it's not being moilad, I think the perfume is there, and then the perfume is here. It seems like if it just changes places and actualizes itself in a different place, that could be very diamond to the rain, where it's vapor there, and then it changes places.
Yeah, so it's not an issue of the smell there, it's an issue now my shirt is a new type of shirt. It's a scented shirt now. So that's the creation. So in terms of this, so now what we see, according to Rav Moshe, going from a liquid to snow would be a problem. And then certainly, a liquid to ice. Now, making ice on Shabbos is also a big discussion. That's a big machlokas poskim, we'll discuss maybe a different time. So if liquid to snow is a problem, so certainly liquid to ice would be a more of a problem. Like in the sciences, I remember learning it goes from a vapor or gas to liquids to solids. That's the way it grows. So snow is somewhere congealed, I guess they would call it, somewhere in between, like the Mars. It's kind of like a liquid, but kind of like a solid. It's not quite like an ice. So it's somewhere in the middle. So if you assume liquid to snow is going to be nolad, certainly liquid to ice should be nolad as well. So that's according to Rav Moshe how he paskins. So the sleet becomes rain. Very good. That's also a good shiloh. What about, let's say, a barad or hail would certainly be a problem. So, but the other way, let's sleet that turns into rain might be the same discussion. If you assume one direction, it should be nolad.
But maybe it started as rain, then
it turns to sleet. So post point out, apparently the way it works scientifically is that it always comes down as rain initially. Mm-hmm. It doesn't become snow until it comes close to the ground. So the sleet, some point in the middle, it became water to sleet, to water, so it should be the same issue. But some poskim do distinguish in different directions. We'll see if we get across that a little bit today. But right now we have water to snow, according to Rav Moshe, is a problem of nolad.
I don't mean this in a chutzpahdik way, but why do we need a tshuva from a relatively latter day poskim on snow when we lived in Europe for 1,000 years, it snowed 6 months out of the year? Well, what's a chiddush over here? Like, what was the minhag in Europe?
It's a great, great point.
But why? Because I think Rabbi Yosef says it's mutar betiltul, because it is no different. It's just water that went through stronger cold, and it's mutar betiltul.
Right. So I think both you're making a great point, and because of that, we'll see in a little bit. Some say the fact that the poskim didn't mention this before Moshe. The Gemara's talk about breaking ice to get water, and no one ever mentioned Muksa. They knew what Sheleg was. The Gemara talks about Sheleg. It wasn't mentioned. Now, not every case is mentioned in the Gemara, of course. But so many years went by without anyone mentioning Muksa, so they think that really there was no Muksa problem at all when it came to snow. But so we'll see later on, the Orach HaShabbos, Rabbi Reuben writes, that since nowadays no one will ever drink the snow, it becomes more of a problem of Muksa. Not so much a problem of Nolad, but more of a problem of Muksa. It doesn't really seem that way for Moshe. Moshe sounds like it's really an issue of Nolad. So I don't know, maybe Moshe, he lived in Russia, he knew it. Maybe he had such a minhag that they didn't play with the snow on Shabbos.
No, that's Nolad if it fell on Shabbos.
If it fell on Shabbos, exactly.
If it fell on Shabbos, then it's Nolad.
Very good, exactly. Nolad's only relevant if it falls on Shabbos. If it fell previous to Shabbos, then the only concern is Muksa. So it depends whether a person would actually use snow for drinking and for bathing and for things like that.
So the question is, like, if it's ma'us, then it becomes mutse. So long as it's clean, like we have here in Brooklyn, it's mutse, it would be ma'us. Here you can play with it because it's not ma'us.
Right.
And eventually put in your mouth, eventually, the same way you do
right.
for the rain.
Right. I guess the question is it really drinkable and would anyone actually drink it?
Nothing happened if you were in your mouth.
Right.
I mean, no one would say, don't do it.
I would, if I saw my kids drinking it.
No, it's not easy. A kid doing it. With the rap said to your kid,
Right.
Right, it's not so...
But you take off the very top of it.
Right. Get some of the inside, whereas in any of the car driving over it, where it's below the brown and black. Okay, I don't know. But they're all very good points.
That's your own tape.
Okay, so that's the position of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe writes that he thinks that snow is a problem of nolad. Now, again, it might be the Shabbos, the next Shabbos, it would already snowed beforehand. Any leftover snow might be mutter, according to Rav Moshe. He doesn't talk about that case. If you look at Shmir Shabbos, this is number 10 now. He quotes from Rav Shlomo Zalman, and this is Ha'ara Kuf Yud. Kuf Yud, it's around 8 lines from the bottom. This is the bottom of page 2. He says, we're running out of time here. He ended up writing, let's just jump down 2 lines in Kuf Yud here. He writes for Shlomo Zalman Arbach here, Shlita, it's Zatzal now. Shemati, it's already well known that rain only turns into snow as it approaches the ground. I don't know how close to the ground, but not when it's up there in the sky, it's still rain. Below Lifneke, not before this. It didn't exist the day, it didn't exist beforehand. Even if it was in the clouds, it wasn't snow up in the clouds. Still, nonetheless, Shlomo Zalman does not think it's a problem of nolad. Because he thinks going from a liquid to a snow is not a problem. That's what he thinks. But this is very lemaisa when it comes to, let's say, using the whipped cream on Shabbos, whipped cream cans. So that's a liquid inside, and it goes into, let's call it snow type of texture and form. So is that mutter or not? So that's a discussion of poskim. Many are machmer, there's some are mekel. But seemingly that would be taller on this very machlokas. When it goes from a liquid to a snow, it's similar to going from a liquid, it's probably better. A liquid to the whipped cream is more of a liquid than snow is a liquid, I think. So if you assume that liquid to snow is mutter, like Rosh Hashanah Zalman says, lechora, I don't know what he said, but lechora, he would think whipped cream would be permitted as well.
No, on problem of shaping it, like with the toothpaste.
That's why people cut the top, yeah, so that there is no shape.
The shape of the whipped cream?
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah, like a, so like it makes a shape.
It came
so cut the top, so then you have
a oh, yeah.
It's like a toothpaste.
That's the guy in Gourmet Guy gives you the tip. He says, oh, yeah. Cut the top.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know.
Whipped cream is more molded as opposed to nolad, which is so wouldn't be more machmer.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. So you have to define what change, what, again, first, what's considered a change. The way Rosh Hashanah Zalman presented it, it sounds like it's not an issue of changing form. That's not considered change in form. Had it been a change in form, so then there's room to be more makel by nola than there's by molad. It's a very good point. But it sounds like the presentation here, again, I'm not passing by whipped cream. I'm just saying, keep in mind, whatever is considered changing of forms will be relevant for many, many other areas of halacha as well. But regarding snow, Rosh Hashanah Zalman clearly says, it was quoted as saying, that there is no problem of nola when it comes to snow.
So making ice cubes?
It's the same machlokas. Big machlokas. The way Shmir Shabbos Paskins is that one ideally should not make ice cubes on Shabbos, but if one needs to, one may. And that's the next marmakum, which I'm not going to go through. And the next piece he discusses in great length about making ice and when it comes to barad and melting ice. Maybe we'll save that for another time. Let's jump now to number 12 in the Orach Shabbos, page number 3. So the Orach Shabbos written by Rabbi Reuben. Rabbi Reuben is the Rav of the shul in Har Nof where that those attacks took place. So Rabbi Reuben has a wonderful sefer on Shabbos called Orach Shabbos, and he writes Mei Geshamim. How is he passing by Mei Geshamim? So we already saw, we don't read this inside. He passing like what we saw, that rain is mutter on Shabbos because it's roy. If it's in a case where it's not roy, then Enechanami would be muksa. But it comes to Sheleg Os Kuf Tali Dalet. He writes Nechleku Poskeis Manenu Im Sheleg Hu Muksa. Now, I think he's not talking about a case of nolad. He's not referring to snowing on Shabbos itself. He didn't address that issue for some reason. But let's say he already snowed Erev Shabbos or beforehand. You have snow on the ground, like we had this past Shabbos. There's plenty of snow on the ground still. So is that snow considered muksa or not? Forget nolad right now. So Yesha Osrim, there are those who forbid this. V'tamam, the reason is because Mishum She'ein Regilis Klal Lahafoch Asa Sheleg L'mayim. Nobody turns snow into water. It's no different than dirt. It's part of the ground now, which dirt and stones and rocks and pebbles are all muksa. So snow is also going to be muksa. It becomes part of the ground because no one actually drinks it. And those who permit it, they think it's okay because since snow has a din of water, it's considered a mashka, it's considered like water. And just like everybody agrees, the Gemara in Beita tells us that there is no issue of muksa when it comes to rainwater, so too there's no issue of snow either. Then he writes, going to the next page, continuing in the Orach Shabbos, page number 4. V'lachein l'deos ha'osos, therefore according to those who say that muksa, that it is muksa, that snow is muksa, so, as tiltel ha-sheleg, yesh li-izayir shelo le-taltel es ha-sheleg. It got cut off a little bit. You see, these are my own pictures I took. You can see my computer on the top there. So, shelo le-taltel es ha-sheleg. Bein biyado bein b'ragla. A person shouldn't pick up snow with his hand. Forget forming any snowballs right now. Just picking them up should be a problem. Or even moving it with your leg would be a problem. Aval ein iser le-lech ha-gavi ha-sheleg. But to walk on the snow, that's okay. Af shehu noeg, I'm not sure the word is. Umetaltil it stadim, even though you're causing the snow to be pushed to the side. Toch dehilucha, that's just walking regularly. You're allowed to walk regularly, just like I could walk on the grass, even though the grass might rip up. That's just the normal way of walking. So too, even though I'm moving the snow and there's muksa, that's not my intention, that's permitted. Then he talks about shoveling snow, which we'll get to maybe a different point. But he comes out saying, it sounds like he's machmir, that one should really not to move snow, one shouldn't move it with their feet either. The feet, why not? So some say, isn't moving with the feet considered tiltum and atzad, shinoi of some sort. He says, since the normal way to move snow is with the feet, so it becomes, it's a normal thing now. People kick snow, people move snow. That's a problem of muksa as well. So that's how he seems to paskin. One should be machmir, that snow should be treated as muksa on Shabbos. Even if it snowed before Shabbos, it should be treated as muksa.
So then in the situation where you're walking down the sidewalk and there's no snow over there and you have snow that's just on the side and you want to see whether it's hard or soft, you take your foot and just pat it a little bit. It's already muksa.
It sounds like if you move it, patting it, am I allowed to touch a car in Shabbos? The halacha is yes. I could touch it. There's the only problem with muksa, the Rama says in a couple of places, is only if you move it. Touching muksa is okay. Most things when you touch it will move, though. I touch a car, it's not going to move. Though we saw yesterday some guys pushing the car up the street. Anyone see that? No. Leaving, it was very funny. So it was yesterday afternoon. So, but normally when you touch a car, it doesn't move. So if you touch snow, it depends. If it's hard snow, it's not going to move. But you're not going to know until you actually touch it.
That's right.
So l'chor, according to this, or Chashabbos, one should not touch the snow because of muksa.
Rabbi Levin, it's muksa machmas gufa, right? So, but that's for us adults. But what about 4 or 5 year olds where there's it can't be muksa machmas gufa because they actually, it's the minute.
Okay, it's very, very good. It's very good. So what comes out is that since it's machlokes poskim, some say muksa, some say not. So one can be, and perhaps should be, make ill on the children, because there's who to rely on in that case. Now, I wouldn't make a big deal if the kids are playing with snow, but playing with snow is different than making snowmen and snowballs. We'll get to, I guess, now.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So there's a lot of interesting footnotes here, but we're going to have to skip all this stuff.
This is on the last line of that footnote that Rob just read.
Which point? About the snowballs.
Yeah.
I want to get there. I want to get there inside. He does quote a real Yashiv who concludes that it's not muksa. He thinks it is not muksa. I'm not sure why he doesn't really present this in the top part. Only in the footnotes he presents this. But Rav Yashiv paskind that it's not muksa. So there's a big machlokas whether snow, again, snow that was from before Shabbos, whether that's muksa on the Shabbos after or not. That's a machlokas. And again, I think the adults should be machmir and the kids are allowed to be mekel. So what about, and Rav Simcha Bar Kohn writes in number 13, he also writes that snow is permitted on Shabbos, he paskins, even if it falls on Shabbos, he thinks there's no problem of muksa, there's no problem of nolad. So there are many who do say that it is okay on Shabbos, even if it falls on Shabbos as well. And when he's talking about snow, it's referring to only when you use it for a purpose. Meaning, I can't just move items for no reason. In general, it's a concept of muksa. I can't just move something because I want to move it. Mishnah Berurah talks about this. So I can only move something if I need it. I can't just play around with something without any purpose.
We need the makom that
exactly. Right.
I have a question having to do with children, with snow. Don't we have the situation of hinuch?
Mm-hmm. Very good. So chinuch is very, very important, of course, and whatever adults can't do, children shouldn't do either. Lo sase is certainly applied to chinuch and teaching children to stay away from them for the most part. That itself is a big discussion. But when it comes to playing, for them, it's not considered a muksa, though, because for them, it's a purpose. They're going to get hanah out of this. I won't get any hanah. I won't get any pleasure from playing with the snow. So for me, it becomes pointless. But for them, it becomes a purpose. And also, we could be meikel on them, because there are many poskim, Rav Yashiv among them, who permitted it. There was no problem with muksa. But if it was something that's usher to eat a nevela, to eat something that's shreif, so then we wouldn't let them do that. There's no one to rely on that. But that's part of a larger discussion that we don't give nevela to katanim, of course. So let's get to the issue of snowballs and snowmen. So if you look in the number 6 now, the bottom source of number 6, this is number 14. Shmir Shabbos writes, this is Os Mem Dalad, in that picture I took. Oser lasos kadure sheleg o bobo sheleg. You can't make snowballs or even snowmen. That's a doll. You can't make snow dolls, which I would imagine, maybe snow angels. I don't know, snow angels or snowmen. Whatever it is, you can't make any forms of snow, whether it's a snow angel, snowman, or snowballs. Aval sheleg atzmo eino muksa. But the snow itself is not muksi paskins, gamim yard b'shabbos. So we see another source, a very important source, that sheleg's not muksa. You just can't form them into some type of shape. So what's the problem of making snowmen and snowballs on Shabbos? So he looks at number 15, go to the next page. He writes in footnote number Kuftes. He says, he quotes from the Rambam, I'll just read this outside because we're really running out of time. He says that kol hamakabes, anyone who gathers two things together and forms it, and vidavaka kol, it all comes one formation, that's a problem of binyan, a problem of bona. You're building something by making snowballs. Snowmen, that's an issue of bona by putting blocks together and Lego together. I'm not passing by Lego, but putting things together and forming something new, that's a problem of bona. That's what he writes. Then he writes further in Shmir Shabbos here. He quotes from the Sefer Menucha Nechona Mlechas Disha, that it's usher to even throw the snowball. So someone asked me on Shabbos, if you assume that snowballs are usher, so let's say someone throws a snowball at you on Shabbos, how are you supposed to get them back? I said, well, you could have them prepared before Shabbos. Prepare them before Shabbos and have your whole arsenal in your freezer or in your backyard. You have a bunch of snowballs. But he quotes a sefer that says, Aser gam lizrok kedur sheleg. You can't even throw the snowballs on Shabbos. Even they were pre-made before Shabbos, pre-packaged. You still can't throw them on Shabbos because of Disha.
Even with an
Erev? Even with an Erev, right. What's the problem of Disha? Very strange. He said, what's the problem? Disha means if I'm squeezing something, I squeeze juice out of a grape or al. That's so they think by throwing the snowball, that's squeezing, it's spreading, separating it. Unclear. Shmir Shabbos himself is not really sure why that's a problem. Lo yadati mikor l'isser d'ishazeh. I don't know where he got this from at all. But k'sas yesh l'ayin, you have to look at this. Maybe it's an issue of soser. You're destroying something. You're destroying the snowball. Hard to say. Either way, he says that certainly making the snowballs is a problem, making the snowmen is a problem, perhaps throwing the snowballs might also be a problem, but he's not so comfortable with that. In the end of the day, what comes out is as follows, that we have a big machlokas whether there's an isser of nolad, an isser of muksa when it comes to snow. I would certainly advise the adults to avoid any snow, whether the snow fell on Shabbos or even fell before Shabbos, to avoid it if possible. Walking down the path is okay. If it gets in the way, shoveling is another discussion. There are certain hatayim for shoveling for a very superficial way, so no one gets hurt, of course. When it comes to children, so it depends what they want to do. If they're able to refrain, so they can. If they don't want to refrain from it, there's certainly those who to rely on to play the snow. Just don't build any snowballs, snowmen, or I don't think even snow angels. Okay.
Well, there's no nylon, right? According to